You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon, I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend, and joining us today are Brenda Luna and Katie Breslin, and they're here with the Friends Committee on National Legislation, and they're here to talk about what the committee does, everything that they do with students as well, because Brenda is a graduate student of ours, and she's going to be going to law school next year, but she got hooked on to the Friends Committee on National Legislation, and we're going to hear a little bit about what they do, and especially with the new administration in office. Brenda and Katie, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
First of all, let's start with you, Katie. As I mentioned, Friends Committee on National Legislation. What is that?
So we are a lobby on Capitol Hill. I work on Capitol Hill right across the street from the Senate office buildings. And we've been around for a very long time advocating for peace and justice on Capitol Hill. We're a Quaker lobby. Quaker is a religious denomination of Christians. And we listen to Quakers across the country, including Quakers like here in El Paso at the El Paso Friends meeting, and they tell us what they would like us to advocate on. So we advocate on a wide variety of issues, from immigration reform, which Brenda works on, to ending mass incarceration. We work on peace and justice, diplomacy. We have about 40 staff in our office that all focus on lobbying Congress on behalf of the public interest.
And how long has this been?
So we've been around since the 40s, a very, very long time. And we were the first religious lobby on Capitol Hill. So we've been around for a while, and we've been building relationships with Congress since our beginning.
I don't want to, I don't know if I should be saying this, devil's advocate, especially since you're a Christian organization, but there has been a lot of criticism, as you know, because of religion, because of faith. There's been so much disruption, especially during this last presidential election. Mm-hmm. So how would you compare that to some of the past years that you all worked in? Because I know that you haven't worked in since the 40s because you're not that old. But tell us a little bit about some of the issues perhaps that you face, or are there roadblocks?
Yeah. So we've been, we believe that people of faith and of no faith, our organization not only encompasses people of faith and of Quaker faith, but also people that just resonate with the values that we have as an organization. There's definitely been some roadblocks, and I would say that we advocate pretty strongly for religious freedom, and sometimes that means standing up with our brothers and sisters in the Muslim religion when they see persecution or they see their refugee status be in danger because of public policies that our Congress puts on. So we are a religious lobby, and we work interfaith, and actually our immigration reform activists and lobbyists in Washington, D.C. is the head of our interfaith immigration coalition, because we see the faith voice as a very strong and important one in Washington, D.C. But we also believe in religious liberty, which means that, it is our right to be able to advocate, but it's also the rights of any other religion to advocate as well.
Let's talk a little bit about advocacy and the advocacy core that you are the head of and Brenda is part of. So tell us a little bit about what you do with the advocacy core, and how are you responsible to, because you have 19 students or more?
Yeah, 18. Brenda's one of 18 students across the country. We have two here in Texas, one in Corpus Christi, and this is the second year of our program. This was a program that was created because we heard from our constituents, people that are part of our network, that they wanted to invest specifically in young adults. And so we've created this program where we offer training for 9 months, and they get I get to work with them all across the country. We give them a small stipend to do this work, and it's about 30 hours a month of lobbying and community organizing, and as well as engaging the media. So that's why we're so happy to be here.
And Brenda Luna, who is, as I mentioned, is one of our graduate students here, is expecting to go to law school next year. Brenda, tell us how you found out about the committee on national legislation, and also how you got selected, and what you're doing as far as your part.
Sure, thank you. Well, I found out about the FCNL through our Career Center, which is a great resource here on campus. You tipped us a great job of helping students, find internships that will help them for their future career and just grow as a student and as a constituent in their city. FCNL is a great organization. They've really taught us that social justice is an important part of life and that we should advocate for those who can't advocate for themselves. And the issue that we're advocating for today is immigration reform. First of all, I'm directly impacted by the issue. I am an immigrant. I'm a international student here in UTEP, and you know the laws of immigration right now need to be reformed because a lot of people are affected. A lot of people that are here in El Paso alone have a lot of issues enrolling in school, finding a job because they don't have the opportunity because legislation isn't in place. So we are very lucky to be in a place like El Paso. It's a very unique city where we have the support of the community. Our representative, O'Rourke, has a huge role in making people understand that immigrants are an important aspect of our community. So I'm really glad that we can experience that.
So tell us a little bit about your involvement and what you've experienced so far. Because as you mentioned, you got involved last semester and you're doing a 9-month internship. So what have you experienced that perhaps you were not aware of before and that's going to help you on your journey to law school as well?
Sure. Well, one of the things that we are tasked with is lobbying Congress, and I've been in a couple of lobby visits with our local representative, O'Rourke. So the fact that we can make an appointment with him and talk with his staffers or with him in person and make him hear our voice and make him aware of what concerns us is amazing. A lot of people here do not know that they have that right, that they have the right to speak with local representatives. So last semester, I took a group of about 15 students from my public speaking class that I taught. And these are all students from the ages of 18 to 20 or 21. And they didn't know that they had that right to go and lobby Congress. So that was exciting. They now are politically active. They understand the role that they have as constituents. And, you know, the power that their voice can carry. So that's been one of my experiences. Also, when I was in Washington, I was able to lobby in Congress in the Capitol. And it was exciting to just learn and understand the power of our voice and the power that we have as constituents.
If you would both, either one of you, wouldn't mind telling us, we hear the term lobbying a lot, and a lot of people aren't familiar with perhaps what does it involve? You know, Brenda, as she says, she got to go to Capitol Hill and lobby there, but a lot of people don't understand what it means. Some people actually get perhaps a misunderstanding, thinking, oh, this is when you, you know, go and pay a representative something or give him some favors and they'll do this, but there is something else involved in this, and the fact that you are involving 18 young people in this, Katie, tell us what exactly is lobbying and how does it work?
Yeah, so lobbying is just a fancy way to say a conversation that's already planned ahead of time by having an appointment. We have trained Brenda and the other 18 organizers to have these conversations and to have them in a way that we're actually listening to each other. I think there's a lot of times where you hear, especially in the political culture that we're in right now, of people that are dividing against each other. And the art of having a conversation and the art of just simply sitting across from someone and being able to tell them your story, your point of view is something that we teach at the Friends Committee with the organizers. And what Brenda said is true, you know, about teaching young people how to have these conversations. We see this with organizers across the country that they've been bringing in other young people and using that fancy word lobbying, and that sometimes that can be very intimidating. But just walking, we have a format that we recommend of how to walk through a lobby visit, which includes, you know, telling someone, having individual roles of telling your story, making sure that you make it very clear what you're coming in for, and offering any resources that you have, such as articles, such as personal stories, such as, you know, something that you saw online, to the representatives, because oftentimes they get very overwhelmed. There's a lot of interest in D.C. We aren't the only lobbying organization in Washington, D.C. And so hearing from their constituents like Brenda, like those that live here in El Paso, is incredibly important, because what lobbying does is it helps members of Congress prioritize what issues they should work on. And so Congressman O'Rourke has been a huge advocate for immigration, probably in part because he's heard from constituents across his district that immigration is an important issue to him.
And anyone who knows their American history is aware that since you all were around since the 1940s, immigration was a big issue even back then.
Yeah.
And the fact that, Mrs. Roosevelt, the First Lady, got very involved in helping refugees. As far as immigration reform goes, it's been a political football forever. I remember when I used to work in television news in the 1980s, it was still the Simpson-Mazzoli Act was there and amnesty program, all that. Now there's the Bridge Act. And if you want to tell us about that, Brenda, because you're involved in the Bridge Act, and that tell us what the acronym for the Bridge Act is. Oh, I see it here. Bar removal of individuals who dream and grow our economy. Bridge Act. Which sounds easier, Bridge.
Yes, it's easier to remember for sure. Well, the Bridge Act basically wants to protect dreamers that have been a part of the DACA program, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And these are children that were brought into the country at a very young age. You know, they didn't have their own decision to come here. Their parents thought it would be a good decision to make on their behalf, so they did come. And the Bridge Act, essentially, they want to protect dreamers from Trump's promises of either revoking their status or deporting them to their country of origin. So the Bridge Act really wants to offer an opportunity for these dreamers that they're often referred as to continue living in the United States, continue their education, continue working and contributing to communities. These are all people that have families, friends, coworkers, other students that they're just a part of a community, and it is not right that you would want to break that community and tear families apart. So the Dreamers won a legal way to continue in the United States, and the Bridge Act offers that. It's a three-year program where they will be able to continue doing what they're doing. You know, the Dreamers, 6% of 750,000 sheltered arrivals own businesses, and they employ others, and they contribute to the economy of the United States. So removing their status and making them illegal is just it's a risk that the United States can take.
One of the things that I've heard from some immigrants, and I'm not sure if you all have addressed this when you lobby, the fact that they want to come here legally. But the problem that holds them back is the cost of filing for citizenship and all the attorney fees and all this. And especially when you come from a country where you're making $3 to $6 a day and the fees are so high.
Exactly. And we see that the Bridge Act is the first step of many steps towards a more humane immigration system. Right now, the current immigration system, it is expensive. We do hear that quite a bit, and there are lots of barriers. And one of the other problems that we have is that if someone is able to pay for the initial visas to get over here, the cost of maintaining status is oftentimes a huge barrier for people to be maintaining their way here in the United States. And, you know, with DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which was a huge deal here and it allowed many young people to be able to have regulated status. We actually have a DACA recipient in our advocacy corps named Jose in Staten Island. And without DACA, he's a nurse part-time. And without DACA, he's not going to be able to be a nurse anymore. So there's a very human face on DACA and in immigration reform, not only here in El Paso, but across the United States.
And so these are people, young people, who are contributing to the economy, everything else in our country. And it's not what some people assume, that they're here, what some people have said, to take American jobs. You know, if people go back to read John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, you see the horrible things that these families went through, and they were abused, and different things happened because they had to do it. And that's something that we don't talk about very much as far as what some of these immigrants are doing, living and working in fear so that they can pursue that American dream.
Yeah, exactly. And oftentimes we see that immigrants might not be willing to say, when crimes are happening in their neighborhoods because of their afraid of their status, or they might not be able to contribute to their communities in a larger way because they're afraid that their neighbors will find out about their status. It happens here in El Paso. It happens in Corpus Christi. It happens in different places in Ohio and Pennsylvania. It's a all over the country problem. And I think one of the things that is interesting about the Bridge Act specifically is that it's a bipartisan bill. Not only is there's Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina is not a liberal. He's a very strong Republican conservative, and he's put his neck out on the line for this Bridge Act because he understands the importance of Dreamers in our community. And I think that that's something that, you know, Republicans, Democrats, Independents can all agree on, is that our immigration system is broken. It's not working the way that we would like it to. It puts major burdens on the poor and is inhumane for those that actually need to be able to be here in this country. It puts burdens on our economy. It puts burdens on families who have mixed status. And so I think one of the things that we can all agree on is that it's not really working the way that it should be.
And what does this do for you, having a new administration now? Everything you've done to lobby, does that change anything, Katie?
With the Trump administration, I would be blissfully ignorant if I didn't say that Trump becoming the president didn't change our lobbying. But I think what it does actually is that there is more room for us to have Democrat and Republican allies and people to stand up for immigrants and immigrant rights in Congress. Congress became more important when Donald Trump became elected, because we need Congress and members of Congress to stand up more than ever for these issues. And so that's, I would say, now is the time, if you are considering calling Congress, now is the time to call them, because I think they are listening. There was a huge surprise. We were all surprised in D.C. when President Trump was elected. And I think this is an opportunity for us to really go forward and tell our members of Congress exactly how we feel and what policies we think they should and shouldn't be pushing.
Well, as you mentioned, the Bridge Act is a bipartisan act in a bill. And this is something that I think some people have said, that President Trump is now going to find out that this is no longer the campaign. He is now the commander in chief, and he is now going to have to listen to what Congress says, what other people say, because he's not the CEO of his company anymore. That's why we have the checks and balances in the United States, and we all hope that this will, be something that he follows.
Exactly. He can't pass. I mean, he can, of course, overturn DACA, and that would have huge implications to the people that we work with and the people in our country. But he also has to listen to Congress, and they are in ways partners in this, just as you mentioned, the checks and balances. And we know that the Republican caucus specifically has divided issues on immigration. They have divided opinions on that. We've heard from our advocacy core organizers that are in Democrat and Republican districts that the offices do want to commit to fixing our immigration system. And many of them do want to see either a pathway to citizenship or a way for people to stay here with some type of regulated status.
Katie, tell us a little bit about some of the other work you do with some of the other students across the nation. Are they all working on the Bridge Act, or is it just people in the border areas?
It is. So each class has a specific theme. This year's class has been working on immigration. We base the issue based off what we think is the most politically relevant issue of the time. And I think it would be hard to say that immigration isn't that issue in the national stage. But next year, we are going to have a new class, and they're going to be working on climate change. So every year, the issue kind of changes to give new people and new opportunities for people to work on different issues. And I actually just came back from Seattle, and tomorrow I'm heading over to Portland because we have advocacy corps people all over. And when I'm there, we're training people, we're talking on radio programs like this, and we're teaching people how to engage with the media through letters to the editor and op-eds, because we know that when people have skills, when people are able to access these things, that they're more likely to be able to contact their members of Congress.
Tell us a little bit about something that, we talked about it at the beginning of the interview, the fact that a lot of people are unhappy and some people are, concerned. But at the same time, in the United States, you have the right to go out and protest. You have the right to march. However, some of these protests, some of these even during the campaign, became violent. And I know that the Friends organization is a very peaceful organization.
Yeah, Quakers have a long history of peaceful protest, peaceful actions. You know, I think there are lots of different ways to be active and to let your voice be heard. We saw that with the Women's March in Washington, D.C., and I heard that there was a similar march here in El Paso that had over 1,000 people at it that some local Quakers were at. I think that all these actions are important. And of course, you know, ideally, no one gets hurt when we're doing these actions, but they're all equally important. Lobbying your member of Congress is incredibly important for that reason. And it's oftentimes a forgotten art that people forget that they can just set up an appointment with their member of Congress's office. And we see that all the time. Our organizer in Portland told me that the students that she worked with were completely stunned that she could just call up the member of Congress and be like, hey, or the office and say, hey, I'd like to come in today. So we see, you know, protesting is one tactic, and it's, you know, in some ways that could be very important. Lobbying is another tactic, but also direct service and making sure that we're taking care of people in our communities. All of these things together, especially when we're able to communicate to one another, all these tactics are also all good ways to make change.
And Brenda, you mentioned earlier that in your public speaking class, you shared this with the students. And, you know, this is a tool that is very much needed as far as getting the message across. And that's communication. And it's very important, whether it's public speaking, speaking, as a business member, whatever. It's very important that message get across.
Definitely. And so my public speaking class throughout the semester, they looked at different issues that they had an interest in. Some of them were immigration. Some of them were gun reform or healthcare, you know, and they took that issue throughout the semester, developed their knowledge, looked up bills that have been passed or haven't been passed. And they were able to just see how the political process works. You know, it is the voice of the constituents that really make representatives move forward with something. So they were able to learn those skills, like Katie said. Of course, they learned about LTEs, which are incredibly powerful as well. So I agree, communication is a tool that we all have. So we should definitely use it and not be shy about it.
This class, as you mentioned, 9 months you work with these young people. So what happens at the end of the class?
It's really exciting that, you know, afterwards, and we are seeing this with our first class that worked on climate change last year as well, that many of them, you know, get further internships or jobs doing lobbying. And one of them is actually going to law school and got an internship over the summer at a lobbying organization. But some of them, and quite a few of them, have continued to stay involved with us in other capacities. Just because, you know, and I'm looking at Brenda and saying, don't leave me, because we know that advocates like her, this is a lifelong journey. And we know that advocates like her and others that are in the advocacy corps can always contact us and let us know when they want to lobby. We have a network. This is isn't the only program that we run for FCNL. We have a network of thousands of activists across the country, and many of them just, you know, pick up the phone and lobby on the issues that they care about that are in our portfolio. So we invite the Advocacy Corps, and many of them have, to continue to lobby with us.
Katie, tell us a little bit about how social media has changed the way you all function and work.
Oh, it's absolutely changed everything. The way that we can send information and get information to people that might be interested or to elevate information has completely changed. We have a Twitter account. We have an Instagram, a Facebook page, and they each serve different roles. Our Facebook page is kind of a conversation piece where people will post an article and people could post and comment about their viewpoints and really have conversations. On our Twitter account, it's a really good way to interact with other social movements and elevate information to people that are interested in those topics. And in our Instagram page, it's a really good way to physically see how people can actually make change in their communities. While I'm on the road, I'm actually going to be Instagram video, and Brett and I are going to do a video right after this about how, you know, what I'm doing on the road, what our advocacy corps people are doing on the road. So anyone can follow it along at Quaker_lobby or at Quaker_lobby with no.com.
and so after this class is completed, you have a new class coming in, as you mentioned. How do people apply for this, and what are you looking for? How do you select them?
Yeah. So you can go to futureadvocate.org, which is our website for all of our young adult programs. When we're looking for advocates, we and applicants for the program, we look for people that are dedicated to social justice and the causes that we're working on. We're also looking for people that are interested in specifically learning how to have conversations. As I mentioned earlier, there's lots of different ways to get involved. But if someone doesn't agree with, you know, having a conversation, that might not be a good applicant for the program. We're looking for people that are in college or otherwise, people that have some community ties, so people that have maybe gone to a town hall before or had some interaction with their member of Congress. In terms of majors, we love political science majors, sociology majors, communications majors, history majors, so all the liberal arts. But again, that they're not exclusive to that, because one of our advocates, the other advocate in Texas, is actually going to med school. So it really depends on, you know, the applicant. You could see a description of the program for anyone that's interested on our website, though, at futureadvocate.org.
You want to tell us a little bit about what you're looking forward to as you wrap up your class?
Sure. I am so excited that change will come. I'm excited that even though the Trump administration may be a little difficult to deal with, I'm hoping that they will be open to constituents' opinions and to constituents' points of views. And I am really excited that FCNL really prepares us. They really work hard to give us the information that we need to push towards our representatives, and they just really continue to give us the tools that we need to be completely prepared. So I'm very thankful for FCNL. I'm very thankful that they have the Social Justice Initiative to work on behalf of those who can't do it for themselves. We also, however, have what we call the Spring Lobby Weekend, and that is coming up in March. Mm-hmm. And this is a weekend where anyone is welcome to come lobby Congress, and it will be March 18th through the 21st, mm-hmm. and there are scholarships available for anyone that will be interested. And it's a great opportunity to be politically involved, to learn how lobbying works, to actually experience it. So if anybody's interested, they can contact me directly. My number is 915-999-3765. And I do encourage people to take up this opportunity, first of all, because it will be very enriching, and you just have a brand new perspective on how politics work.
And this is just a great opportunity that you are able to share with your students, because, as you mentioned, they didn't know about lobbying. They didn't know about calling up their representative's office. But they also may not know about the scholarships and the ability to apply for these things.
And our lobby day, we make sure that whenever someone would like to come and lobby, we make it as financially able as they can. So please apply for scholarships. And as Brenda mentioned, it's March 18th to the 21st. So the sooner that people apply for financial aid, the better. This year's lobby weekend is actually going to be on encouraging Congress to not cut certain pieces of the budget that that would hurt the poor and the vulnerable. So we're expecting that Congress is going to look at cuts to the SNAP's food stamp program. We're looking at cuts to the Medicaid and Medicare program. So these are really important health care initiatives and important ways that people get food and other things that they need to be able to survive. So we really need as many people in Congress as possible, and young adults specifically have an important voice to advocate for these policies. When members of Congress see young adults, I think they really see the future, and they really see how important it is to listen to these young advocates. And that's what we've heard from our colleagues on the Hill.
And I think that something important is that no participation is too small. So I feel that that's important to for people to understand, because you can make a call, you can write a letter, you can go to a lobby visit. So no participation is too small.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for flying in from Washington to talk with us.
I'll fly back to El Paso anytime. I love it here.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We've been visiting with Brenda Luna and also Katie Breslin. Katie is the coordinator for the Advocacy Corps, and that is part of the Friends Committee on National Legislation. And Brenda is part of that Advocacy Corps, and she is also one of our graduate students here at UTEP planning to go on to law school. Thank you so much for being with us here
today.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Kim Garcia. Our producer is Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.